Welcome to Around Your Community on WRGG 93.7 FM. I'm Lois Steichen, your host for this weekly program where I talk with representatives from nonprofits in our area so you, our listeners, can learn more about these wonderful organizations and the people who make them possible. Good evening. My guest tonight is Tracy Holliday, Executive Director of the Institute, which is located in Waynesboro. Tracy, I have had your colleague, Assistant Director, Jessica Watson, on with me several times. Her last visit was in April of this year. So this time, I'm very happy to welcome you to Around Your Community.
Thank you very much for the invitation. I'm delighted to be with you.
The Institute has had a lot going on, especially recently. However, I'd like to start with your beginnings. Tell me what the Institute is and how it began.
Sure. The Institute was established as an independent 501c3 organization in 1990, following several years that were seed planting activities initiated by my former colleague, Melody Anderson Smith. Melody was a kindergarten teacher in her professional life, and when she relocated to the Waynesboro community, she was very involved in her own children's education and took her kindergarten class, her own children's class, to Renfrew Park for a nature walk. And they were so enthusiastic that she approached the leadership of the museum and park about establishing a nature center in that location. The executive director at the time, James Smith, was warm to the idea of inviting interpretation of the natural world, but less warm about a true nature center setting, citing that it didn't pair perfectly with the museum's mission. So instead, they worked together to introduce some programming that was really a brilliant platform for school students. The name of the series was Man and His Environment. It was built on the premise of helping students investigate the Pennsylvania German culture and how the landscape and the natural environment shaped the development of that immigrant culture in Waynesboro, Pennsylvania, and how the material culture of those people shaped the landscape. The series was established formally in 1990 with the establishment of the organization. James was the initial director of the Institute for 2 years, I believe. Its name at that time was Renfrew Institute for Cultural and Environmental Studies. The programs that were designed and delivered to our local school community were beautifully received, really, really popular with the educators, with students and families. The reason the Institute was established as a separate 501c3 was because in those initial years, the programming that was happening under the museum and park was also enthusiastically received. And it was clear to that group that they were not going to be able to sustain it financially or with their own staff. One particular person that was instrumental in moving the idea forward was Leroy Maxwell, who was Emma Nicodemus's personal attorney. Emma is the person whose bequest created the museum and park. So it was all done really closely aligned with her intentions. Folks remarked over the years how delighted she would have been with the establishment of this new facet that would not only preserve her personal collection of material culture and that beautiful space, but also create a vehicle for getting folks there and helping them enjoy the stories and learning about the history of the Pennsylvania Germans in that spot.
So what is your mission statement? Has that changed over the years, or is it still from 1990?
Our mission statement remains unchanged. The mission of the Institute is to guide the people of the Cumberland Valley region to become stewards of their natural and cultural worlds. We do that by offering this school program series. That's the cornerstone of our work still. We have a relationship with our local district, the Waynesboro Area School District, in which all students from kindergarten to grade 7 now, we've expanded our series into the middle school, are enjoying an Institute program, a full day of science and cultural history. Even though we've left the Renfrew campus, we continue to interpret cultural history as well as natural history.
You were at the Renfrew property from beginning in 1990
right
through 2020.
there came a point when the Institute was asked to leave the property, which I know was a blow, and you had to adjust your programming. How, in those 2 years, have you adjusted your programming?
We have, I say, been very fortunate, but also worked very hard to establish and maintain relationships throughout the broad community. And that has been key in allowing us to feel safe as we made the decision to exit the Renfrew campus. We anchored ourselves to our mission and established new relationships that allowed us to offer programming from Washington Township Parks. Those folks are delighted that we are bringing students and families to enjoy those wonderful outdoor spaces. A new relationship was developed with the Friends of Monterey Pass. So our fifth grade program is now inviting students to enjoy a Civil War history lesson and a hike up the Monterey Peak, where they have an opportunity for a geology lesson and a forest ecology lesson and a fabulous vista at the top of that hike.
And you have also created a Civil War era garden there, have you not?
We have. Through another set of partnerships and community funders, we established, at the invitation of the Friends of Monterey Pass, a Civil War interpretive garden that is currently focused primarily on medicine plants of the era. In addition to establishing the garden that people can enjoy anytime the park is open, we have established a series of garden talks that started in the fall and will continue in the spring.
I looked at your website, which is a very good one, by the way.
Thank you.
And I saw the list of partnerships that you have. It's very, very long. You have lots of people that you cooperate with. I noticed one is the Conococheague Institute, which is in Welsh Run. I have been involved with them for going on 11 years now. That, I'm sure, has been successful because Matthew Wedd is doing a fine job.
He's a real dynamo. Initially, when the news was breaking that there was going to be a fracture and a departure of our organization from our original campus, folks were calling us, inviting partnerships. And Matthew was one of those folks that was in touch with us, saying, well, we'd love to partner with the Institute. So we did some homeschool days that we planned in conjunction with Matthew, hosting with the Conococheague Institute teaching a history lesson and the Institute teaching a natural history lesson, a science lesson for kids of all ages. And we did a couple of those series that were sellouts. Matthew's scope of operations has really heated up over the last year. And we elected, because of the distance for our staff to travel and the way each of our organizations have expanded in our own activities, we elected not to continue that homeschool series this year, but we are still partnering with CI. Our birdwalk group, the moniker is SOAR, which is studying ornithology around the region, takes bird watchers to a different site each month. Twice a month, they visit a different site in the greater Waynesboro area. And Conococheague Institute is the October destination, I believe.
Let's talk a little bit about the programs that you do offer. I know you do so much with the school system around you. What else, such as for adults? What are some things you do for adults?
We have a full slate of community programs and programming for adults. That roster of activities is expanding. We just had to postpone a star party. We partner with the Tri-State Astronomers a couple of times a year, during which they bring their own telescopes and those fabulous volunteers who help folks get a look at the night sky and sometimes the day sky. They even have sunscopes. Our winter solstice celebration is coming up later this month, and the Tri-State Astronomers will be there with their scopes again. We had to postpone a couple of nights ago because of cloud cover. But last year at winter solstice, people were able to see the rings of Saturn. It's really a spectacular experience for people of all ages.
You also have summer, I'll use the word camps, because that's how parents look at them.
Right. We initially were calling those programs Summer Institute, but in 2019, before the Fisher from our former campus, we had begun to move to a year-round nature center model for our programming. So the things that were happening in Summer Institute, many of those are happening year-round now. So we have outside the school program series, a program for families to engage in independently, We Wonders, for the preschool set. And they come in the heat of the summer, in the crunch of fall leaves, and in the snow with their snowsuits and mittens and hats. It's really a delight. We have an Explore series, which invites children 5 to 12 to explore. Parents may stay with them and enjoy the adventure, or they may drop children off and catch a few minutes of private parent time. Those programs have been very popular. Some of our kids discovered that they were aging out of our programs and said, "What do you have for us?" So we established a new offering called Discover, and that has happened two summers now, in which we partner with Little Antietam Creek, Inc., and Scott Parker, who is an academically trained archaeologist. That is hosted at his farm in Washington Township, and it's a full-day program for children 10 to 17 to investigate archaeology. They do some actual digging and look at how artifacts are cataloged, and also a geology lesson. So science and history paired again in that activity.
How many people do you serve a year?
Traditionally, before the pandemic changed everyone's lives, we were hosting school program visits to between 8,000 and 9,000 students annually. The pandemic hampered transportation for school students, so we are rebuilding that now from the period in which kids were restricted from traveling on a school bus. We serve students from our local district, from the Washington County School District, from across the state line. They had traditionally been about 20% of our visitation. Students from Chambersburg, as far away as Upper Adams, those folks are coming down for programming. And in West Virginia, we have a school visiting from Marlow Elementary. So we truly are, have been, and continue to be a regional organization.
If you're just tuning in, my guest is Tracy Holliday from the Institute. Let's move on to your big news. I heard about what was happening because I interviewed lots of historical societies and historic sites in the county. So there's a little bird among them. You know, little birds always know what's going on. So I heard about this before. But then, of course, the Echo Pilot newspaper, which is our biweekly here in Greencastle, had a very nice long article on what is going on. So, tell us what is going on with the Institute. This is exciting.
It is such an exciting time of growth and change for our organization. And we recognize the moment at which our really wise 16-member board made a unanimous decision that carried with it a great deal of responsibility, but opened us to incredible opportunity. When we left our original campus, we left with the goal of establishing an independent nature center. It took us some time to get our legs under us. We had to recalibrate every single school program and public program that we had offered because we were featuring those from new locations. Our education director worked with the Waynesboro Area School District educators to dovetail curriculum. We are delighted, the school district is delighted with the way those changes have come about, but we need a home. We need an organizational home. We had an opportunity to nest for a while in a small office on Main Street as a gift from a community supporter. We had a great little office that housed our administrative operations. And by November or so of 2020, I had already been in touch with our education stakeholders, our board stakeholders, community stakeholders, and our benefactors who had invested so much in the organization's work over decades. When we got ready to begin our search for real estate, we didn't have financial assets. We have an endowment that at that point was about $500,000 in value, but it is in an irrevocable trust. It is a restricted set of funds that we couldn't access to purchase real estate. One of our largest benefactors over the years has been the Nora Roberts Foundation.
She's great, isn't she?
She is a prolific writer and a really incredibly generous community supporter. Has done so much to transform the landscape in our region and across the broader region. But my conversation with them originated before we made the decision to leave. We have been presented with this decision we must make. We would like to leave with a solid plan for establishing an independent nature center. Would you be willing to have that conversation with us? Great supportive response from their team. And when we got ready to look around, I was in touch to say, we are looking now. Is there a conditional pathway to funding support for a property that we would like to buy that we have not yet identified? And within a couple of days, in a very spare email exchange, we got word that there was an opportunity for the Nora Roberts Foundation to pledge an if need be gift of $500,000.
That's a good start.
That was transformative for us. And with that pledge, we felt confident to scour the community for our new home and outdoor classroom.
And you have found one.
We have found one.
Well, you have bought the farm.
we have bought the farm.
And it's 40 acres, I believe?
It's a 40-acre farm located off of Amsterdam Road, so in proximity to our stakeholders. We have shielded the location of the property intentionally because we have a conditional use ruling from the township that is requiring us to complete some infrastructure projects before we can be fully open to the public. And one of those is building a bridge. So we recognize that it's not going to be instant pudding, as one of our board members said, but it is such a perfect setting for the work that we do. There's a beautiful stretch of the Red Run running entirely across the north boundary of our property. That is a place where stewardship activities have been underway by a private fishing organization before our arrival, and it is really a delightful stretch of the stream. We have a 1-acre pond, which is also delightful but needs some restoration. I have a pledge. I'm about to sign a grant award agreement from the South Mountain Partnership with involvement and partnership from Triad Engineering to do a design study to restore that pond. We have some eroding banks and water breaching through the bank on the north side. It's beautiful. Life is teeming there, but there are also some threats to the longevity. So we'll investigate how we can best restore that and conserve the important habitats that are there and ensure that all the wild critters who wish to live there in a balanced way can do that.
And you have a barn.
We have a beautiful barn, turn of the century, modest size, not cavernous, but we know that the scale of the barn will support our vision for the future, which is to host educational programming, both public programming as well as our school programming. Our chief classroom for our school program series is outdoors, but sometimes inclement weather causes us to need to make a different arrangement. We were challenged at our former location by the lack of facilities that would support that. In 2019, we actually lost some programming, so it was impairing fulfillment of our mission. Our calendar was so full with programming that if we lost a class due to weather, we didn't always have an open date on the calendar. So as we develop our vision for this place, we want to be mindful of serving all of those needs where we found shortcomings at our previous location.
Are there other buildings on the property at this point?
There are. In fact, the barn, our future education building, is probably furthest out in our phasing activities. We are getting cost assessments now on multiple projects. We will look at our resources and our project budgets and make phasing decisions based on how we can best match our resources to our needs. We just moved in to our new administrative headquarters. Although we purchased the property in October of 2021, we have spent the last year fundraising and making modest infrastructure improvements and working on a master site plan so that we can ensure that we move forward judiciously. We have a tremendous stewardship responsibility for the folks who are helping us financially, as well as stewardship responsibility for this property. Our future nature center includes an administrative headquarters and welcome center, which will be housed in an incredible building. It's an acorn deck structure, which was built in 1979, and it's a panelized home that two different families have lived in since 1979. Mid-century modernish vibe windows wrapping the entire structure. It's as if it was created for us. Cedar ceilings, open spaces, and it's a place where on the second floor we'll have our administrative offices, and on the first floor we'll be able to invite the public to a welcome center where we can establish exhibits and do some interpretation from that site as we take on the larger projects. We do have a tenant living on our property. A family lives there, which is another reason we've been cautious to shield the location. We look forward to hosting guided visits. Have been for over the past year. Anyone who's listening who would like to arrange that, I know you'll be sharing contact information at the end of our visit.
Mm-hmm. I know you have a capital campaign that is going on because you are looking to raise, I think I saw the figure, $3 million?
Right. When we contracted to purchase this property, we allowed ourselves a very extensive due diligence period. We investigated the bridge, whether it could carry a school bus, whether we were going to need to modify that bridge. If so, what do we think that's going to cost? To modify the structure on top of the hill that is our offices and will be our welcome center, what investment will we make in that building? What investment will the barn require to converting that to a four-season nature center education building? We will build a pavilion. We are hoping to install Clivus Multrum composting toilets. So with every project that we undertake here, we have a stewardship responsibility to introduce best stewardship practices. What are those features going to require economically? So we came up with a projected budget that also includes our cost of acquisition. And the figure that we arrived at was this $3 million figure that I'm now referring to as our initial goal, because over time, costs have escalated in every arena. But for this initial goal, our priorities are to establish our administrative offices, which we have done, to modify the bridge that will allow full public participation, and initially to get us operational in a way that provides the infrastructure school students and their administrators expect, a pavilion and restrooms that will serve on a school program visit day. We have happily already introduced lots of small group engagements to the property, including the Waynesboro Area High School AP Environmental Science class. They walked across the bridge safely. They're mature students and big enough to make that amble without being worn out by the time they get to the study spot. That wouldn't be possible for our preschool set. But we are optimistic and poised to introduce activities and groups of learners, adventurers, and discoverers to our site, even ahead of the bridge. But we have to do that in a way that complies with the ruling we have from the township.
I want to talk a little bit about your staff, your board, and a little bit about you. Who is Tracy and how did you get here? And how long have you been with the Institute?
My affiliation with the Institute began in 1992 as a volunteer. I was a young mother with children at home and looking for a way to contribute to our community in a way that aligned with having little people in the house. I was invited to volunteer on a committee that planned Youth Festival, which is an annual event that is just what it sounds like. It's a free day for families and children to enjoy outdoor learning, spontaneous discovery, lots of volunteers involved. I served in a volunteer capacity for 4 years in that arena before I was invited to join the staff in 1996. So I have been on the staff since 96, wearing many, many, many different hats.
As a person who has worked for nonprofits my whole life, yeah, you wear many hats and a lot of them all at the same time.
Oh, it's true. It's true. Eventually, in 2017, I did step into the director's position. My colleague, Melody Anderson Smith, and I worked side by side all those years, literally side by side in a tiny little office. Melody retired just last year, fully retired, as the Director of Environmental Studies, which she had taken on in a halftime role once she stepped away from the executive director position.
You do have a good-sized staff. I enjoyed the picture on your website, and I especially liked that the cat was rubbing against your leg when that picture was
taken. Yes. We have an incredible staff. committed, resilient, and very bright. For each of us, our work is a labor of love.
Your board also is good-sized.
We have a board of 16. We have a nominating and governance procedure for establishing and maintaining our board operation. And when we interview people for board service, we let them know that the Institute's board is a working board. Those 16 folks are so committed. And really, the things that we're talking about now, the strength of our board, the strength of our staff, and the strength of our community relationships are all foundational to our success always, and particularly during this period of unexpected change and growth.
Mm-hmm. As far as your campaign to raise more money for everything that you want to do in this wonderful site you have, who headed your campaign itself, and who are some of your primary donors that you've had?
We were fortunate to establish a campaign committee of 13 community servants who had longtime relationships with the Institute. We have seated co-chairs, Dr. Bob Zimmerman. Bob's family has a long history of involvement with our organization, and his wife, Linda, served as our board president for some time. His co-chair is Jeremy Bowersox, who also served on our board as a second-generation board member. Our board composition has been proof to us that we are fulfilling our mission. Jeremy's mother served on our board, and Jeremy was one of our kids. We now have many of our former students who are our bosses or have been our bosses on our board over the years, and that is a really solid demonstration of community stewardship. Our initial board president, Dudley Keller, is serving on our capital campaign committee. So these are long-standing people who have invested in the work of the organization over decades, who wanted to help us ensure the continuance of our good work in the community. Our leadership donors have been instrumental in helping us achieve our current status at $2.4 million. Leadership givers include Tom Beck, George Bucky in memory of his late wife Martha, Marge Kears, the Mummert Family Foundation, the Paul K. and Anna E. Shockey Family Foundation, and the Waynesboro Beneficial Fund. Legions of others have made gifts both large and small and demonstrated to us the warmth of our community and the degree to which the community really wants this to happen.
Let's give people information about you. Let's start with your website.
Our website is www.natureandcultureinstitute.org. And that's a big mouthful, but it does describe what we do.
And you have a presence on social media?
We do. We have a Facebook page. We have an Instagram page. My colleague Jessica Watson maintains both of those with a great eye and a great voice for the organization.
Your phone number?
Our phone number is 717-762-0373.
Say somebody just feels that they have to fill out that $3 million that you're looking at. They want to write you a check.
Yeah.
They would send it where?
We are receiving mail at Post Office Box 971, and we would happily receive such a gift.
Well, that is wonderful. It's great news for you, and I certainly appreciate you being here today. I feel I've learned so much from you, so this is great. That's all the time we have. I'm Lois Steichen. You've been listening to Around Your Community on WRGG Radio in Greencastle, Pennsylvania. Thanks to my guest, Tracy Holliday from the Institute. Keep an eye on this organization's progress with their new site and plan to participate in all they have to give to our community. As you're thinking about end-of-year monetary giving, remember your community radio station, WRGG, 93.7 FM, wrgg.org. Go to our website to see how you can help. This is my final show for 2022. I'm taking the last 2 weeks of the year off. Enjoy the holiday season. I will be back on the air on Thursday, January 5th at 7 p.m. See you then.
Thank you for listening to Around Your Community. WRGG is dedicated to bringing you information on the nonprofits that serve Greencastle, Antrim, and Southern Franklin County. WRGG, we are GA.